Welcome to Spiritually Fierce, the podcast. I am your host, Dr. Ricky Jane Adams, principal and founder of the Institute for Intuitive Intelligence and creator of the Spiritually Fierce movement. Spiritually Fierce is not just a phrase. It is a movement of awakening consciousness of which we are all a part, if we want to be. In each episode, we'll explore what it means to be spiritually fierce, how to become it, and why it is the revolution in consciousness that will save the world. Join me and my fierce guests for deep conversations on spirituality beyond the trinkets and superstitions of the new age that will support you to increase your power to serve. Welcome, everybody, to season two of Spiritually Fierce, the podcast, all about difficult spiritual conversations. And perhaps this is one of those archetypal difficult spiritual conversations. I am joined by my beautiful mama, Mama Angelique, who is also one of the lead mentors in the Institute for Intuitive Intelligence. And we are, I guess, soulmates in a way. We have journeyed together. Our spiritual journeys have been in parallel since the moment I was born. And in fact, Angelique might share the story of how her spiritual journey began with my pregnancy. But we've also had a lot of difficult spiritual conversations in our time. And so I was very excited to be able to bring Angelique on the podcast and allow you to get to know her a little bit more, as well as being my mum. She is a lot of other incredible things. And I think there's a lot of potential juiciness in this conversation. I'm excited to see where it goes. I know Mama Angelique is a little tad nervous about this one. She's very well prepared. She has notes. And of course, I'm going to hope that we can chuck all those notes out and just go where the conversation takes us. But we'll see what happens in the next little while. So thank you, Angelique, Mama, for being here.
Great pleasure.
I know I'm this is outside excited. Of your comfort zone.
It is. But you know, you keep stretching me, giving me invitations to do things that I wouldn't have dreamt of doing. And that's got to be good.
Yes. Well, I'm grateful that you feel happy to be stretched. You likewise have always stretched me. I want to begin by asking you if you can tell me your story. Just start at the beginning. Tell us about you.
Absolutely, absolutely. As you know, my spiritual story began while I was carrying this little baby girl, and I was walking past a health food shop in Perth, and I was literally dragged into that shop almost backwards, and there were some books there that I needed to read. There were some vitamins I needed to take for my pregnancy health, etc. But the books were spiritual, and this was new to me. And so that began opening my eyes to the possibility that there might be more than the way I was living my life, which I really needed to know. But my journey went on from there. I was living in the middle of Saudi Arabia, an interesting place when you think about spirituality happening for you. And one of the pilots on my husband's squadron bought me some books. They were spiritual books, and he must have sensed something in me that he thought he could awaken with these books. And I left them on my bedside table 2 to 3 months before I thought it might be polite to return them, having never looked at them. And shortly afterwards, another friend gave me a book written by Shirley MacLaine. It was called Out on a Limb. And after I had finished that book, I was so excited. There was this deep fire in the pit of my belly, and I really had to follow that through, which sounds great, but living in Saudi Arabia doesn't give you a lot of opportunity for that to happen. And miraculously, there are a lot of miracles in this that I hadn't considered miracles at the time. A group of people just like me found ourselves in the sitting room of a mutual friend, and we supported one another with the little material that we had, with the few books that we had. But one of the people brought in a spiritual teacher from New York, and he spent up to a month with us teaching us, and it was very, very exciting. It was a little dangerous, but it was also really very exciting.
Can I just ask a little bit about that? Because I've never really investigated. So we're in Saudi Arabia, Riyadh, the capital, in the early 80s. You know, there's very, very strict guidelines, not only about who can be there. So you can't, there's no tourist visas. I think they've just now opened Saudi up to tourists. I remember looking at magazines in the supermarket when I was tiny, and there were blacked out lines because everything was censored. How did they bring someone into Riyadh who was not on the staff of, you know, the king?
Well, hopefully enough time's gone by that I can share this safely. In fact, I don't think the teacher's actually still alive. But my friend's husband had a 49% share in a business. And so he could bring in employees from overseas. And so he brought our spiritual teacher in as an employee of his company. Okay. And so maybe a contractor or whatever. But during that time, the teacher's name was Bryce Bond, and he just had meetings with us or one-on-one sessions with us, and he took us, you know, really into stuff that was very exciting for us.
And what was the nature of that? Because, of course, you know, it's one thing to find a spiritual teacher in the middle of Islamic country, you know, where you are not allowed to have, you know, visiting, you know, Shirley MacLaine was not popping over to come and give a lecture series.
It's so true.
How, when you reflect back on this person, Bryce Bond now, how, what was his style of teaching? What did he stand for?
Bryce was a Druid, and he had traveled to England to study Druidism, and he told stories of being left out in the middle of the forest all night and being terrified. And, you know, he developed his spirituality in the Druid tradition, but he was a very powerful healer. He tells a story of his beloved stepfather was trying desperately to die. It was his time. And Bryce would go to the hospital every day and heal him. And then, then his stepfather would have to start the process all over again until one of the nurses took him inside and said, let him make his own choices. And so he allowed him to pass on a number of weeks later. But he was very powerful. He could put his hands on somebody with a developed cancer and watch it drop to the floor.
Wow.
He was an incredible teacher. But for us, he was very gentle, and so he worked with telling us stories, teaching us, having us meditate in a group or do one-on-one work.
Yeah.
I fell madly in love with him.
I'm not surprised at all. I'm sure starved not only for, you know, good company of men, given, you know, the other restrictions on your life for those who don't know. I mean, Angelique, as a married woman, was not allowed to leave her home without a man, a chaperone. She couldn't attend, you know, even the shops, like to go to the supermarket without a male chaperone, and couldn't work. You know, there was obviously no alcohol allowed in the country. It was an incredibly restrictive place for a young woman, mother of two small children, to be, combined with a spiritual awakening. I'm not surprised that anything that fed that would have been irresistible to you, of course. And, you know, maybe it was cute as well, who knows. But I certainly know that the man you were married to at the time was not your soulmate. So what I'm really interested about from my perspective is that your path of spirituality in no way has followed a Druid path. It is not earth related at all. And in fact, that's been a real, not a challenge for you, but I think you've often wondered why you're not connected to that kind of work. So I'm fascinated that your first significant teacher was from that tradition. But what happened next? Where did you go to from there?
We would go on leave, and we would bring books back into the country, hoping they wouldn't be confiscated, because our luggage was always searched for contraband like that. And by some miracle, we were always protected and shared our knowledge. We'd go on leave and find groups to attend, talks to listen to from spiritual people. Remember, there's no internet. There's no way we can just pop online and learn and find groups. It was really down to chance very often. But I found myself living on a little island with my daughters and my husband, just off the coast of France. And I had
several years later, by the way, and it's a different husband, just to keep us all rolling with the punches.
That's true.
And not the spiritual teacher either. We didn't end up with him.
No, 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 no. I didn't quite know how to follow that one through. And I went up to a spiritual retreat centre, which is very famous, called Findhorn in the north of Scotland. And that was a very magical place. I found a woman who wanted me to meet her teacher, and she was Canadian. Her teacher was French Canadian, but he was a shaman, another earth grounded teaching, and he took a group of us up into a mountain behind the Findhorn Institute and did energetic work and was trying, in my case, desperately to awaken certain aspects so that, I could do whatever it was I was supposed to do. It was a magical place, but it turned out this guy was simultaneously in Canada. This French Canadian didn't speak English. And yeah, I mean, the whole thing was just doing my head in. And
that he was bilocating?
Yes.
Was he teaching you in English?
No, he was teaching me in French, which had to be translated. Okay. Fortunately, his student was able to translate for me. I sort of thought, okay, well, that's interesting. I didn't know a lot about this stuff. And I went back into the lodge and I suddenly thought, boing. And there was this information, go upstairs into the meditation room and be quiet. So I thought, I obviously have to do this. So I excused myself and went upstairs into the meditation room. And suddenly this information was just pouring into me. I was having a conversation with nobody who was there. And it just went on and developed from there. So I went to the library and I researched this shamanic approach that this person was presenting to me, this French Canadian fellow, and it terrified me. I was reading a book. I thought, absolutely no way. And I just threw the book across the room because I am not doing this stuff. It's not who I am. And eventually there were wiser people there than me who were able to talk me into the understanding that this was simply the way that was being utilized because it is what was available to my teachers in a different vibrational frequency in that moment. So I was able.
What you're speaking about is that potentially that experience with that French Canadian bilocating teacher activated your capacity to channel non-local consciousness. And for you, as you'll go on to tell us, I know that it's the Brotherhood of Light, the Ascended Masters, but what you read in the books was explaining what you were doing, which was channeling, and that freaked you out.
No, it wasn't that the channeling freaked me out at all. That's always sat comfortably with me. What freaked me out was the idea that I had to go on journeys into Middle Earth and meet bears and have animals protect me. That wasn't who I was, and it didn't resonate. In fact, it frightened me, and I have no idea why.
So when you checked in with those wiser teachers, were they local or non-local teachers?
They were both at Findhorn. Findhorn was a place, in those days especially, I haven't been there for many years, filled with profound spiritual teachers from all over the world. But the information that I'm talking about was coming in directly from my spiritual teachers.
And their confirmation was you don't need to follow that shamanic path in order to do your work.
Yes. Yeah.
And you never, ever have, right? And that's something that has always been, if I was to assign an element or to your energy, it's the air element. It's definitely the father sky, not the mother earth energy. And it's very much in that. So, yeah, there's so much I want to pick up on, but interweaving a little bit of my story into that, one of the great, I think, sadnesses of my childhood was that we were all set after that trip of yours to move to live at Findhorn as part of the intentional community there. I would have been about 10 or 11 years old, I think. And we were living, as you said, in the Channel Islands. And at the 11th hour, you made the decision to take us back to Perth in Western Australia instead of going to Finhorn. And it felt like a real sliding doors moment for all of us, of course. But I wonder why you felt, first of all, that we should go there, and then why you chose to go back to Australia instead.
I had a woman that I supported in her spiritual work, a teacher in Perth, and she had found herself in need of support, and I was perhaps the most suited person to be able to carry her through the issues she was dealing with at the time. So I made the decision to support her journey, and later I realized that, you know, that was a big choice that I made, as you say, a sliding doors moment.
And do you regret that choice?
Sometimes, yes, sometimes I do. But at the same time, I'm fully aware there aren't any mistakes.
No, but what was it that you were hoping for by, because that for everyone else, for the context, it would have been Angelique, myself and my little sister living there largely without mum's husband, George, my father, because he would be away flying as a pilot. So either way, we were going to be living away from him. You know, what was it that you felt Findhorn would offer?
I wanted to immerse myself in this place that was populated with people of deep wisdom from all manner of different teachings, trainings, thoughts, ideas. That you weren't restricted at Findhorn to a way of learning, as you are in a lot of organizations or groups. There's their way or the highway. And in Findhorn, people were there to share. In fact, to such an extent that if you arrived there and you were a builder, you weren't allowed to build for the first 3 months you were there. Whatever it was you did, if you were a doctor, you weren't allowed to do any medical work for the first 3 months. You had to step out of your identity and allow yourself to simply be present. And I found that fascinating.
Yeah. I really do feel like it was one of those moments. But as you say, nothing can go wrong. And you, when we returned to Western Australia, of course, you became very committed to being that channel. And certainly the teacher that you're speaking of, Merva Andrews, is a very accomplished channel. But you were training in that same way. And I remember vividly, you know, sitting with you as you practice that channeling. And I share this quite often with my students now, how much the energy of consciousness has evolved, because even then in the early 90s, you know, the body was shaking and not in the same way that like Edgar Cayce was unconscious or whatever, but there was still a lot of physical movement, which today we don't witness in those that we teach to channel in the Institute. So what was that like stepping into that commitment to become the channel?
It really was confusing. At the time, I had been ill with hyperglycemia, and my way of being able to travel around the world with two small babies and stay safe was I carried with me little tiny cans of baked beans and a spoon, and I would top up my blood sugar levels that way. But the feeling of hyperglycemia and beginning to receive the energy to channel for me was very similar. So quite often when I got that feeling, which was I was to channel, I would think I needed to eat baked beans. and that did become a bit of a joke with my guidance, who would say they actually don't like baked beans. And
I don't blame them.
So it was a little bit funny. But as you say, the energy was much more intense in those days. The whole planetary system has a finer vibration to it now, which allows us the freedom to move into a different dimensional communication with ease. We're very blessed now. But in those days, yeah, it obviously was a challenge, you know, to present yourself in a public space in that way. It wasn't always that, in that in order to prepare me for that role, I would be awoken around 3 a.m. and I would work with my guidance at that time and then go back to sleep if I could later on. And in those times, there could be a lot of physical vibration as the heightened vibrational frequencies were brought through me. But eventually, my system was able to integrate. And so that made it a lot easier to bring that energy through.
I remember from, you know, the rest of my childhood and teenage years that you went on to study many different modalities and follow many different pathways. And if it's interesting to you, you're welcome to share any of those aspects of it. But what I feel was consistent throughout was that commitment to channel the energy of the Ascended Masters and of the Brotherhood of Light, and you know, the great archangels, which of course is something that you've always done. And until you reach the point where tapping and intuitive intelligence tapping became your great love. So I wonder if there's anything about those intervening years that's significant or you want to share with us, because I know, you know, there's a lot in there, but I feel that you're at a point now where what you do has been based on looking at and rejecting a lot of other ways of being.
Yes, definitely. I was blessed with some wonderful teachers and I learned different modalities and I went on to teach them wherever we were living around the world. And yet there was always something missing. I would feel a frustration after a certain amount of time of working in a new way, which had promise for me in the beginning. There was always something that I wanted to do that was different. And so I began to develop my own processes of teaching. I loved working with color. It was still a frustrating experience for me until I did discover tapping. And then I could integrate all of the things that I loved about my spiritual understanding with a process that was being scientifically validated more and more and more around the world, until I was able to create for the Institute of Intuitive Intelligence, Intuitive Intelligence Tapping. And I feel kind of complete in that, if you know what I mean. It's like, okay, all of the stuff that I had been learning for 40 years was finally able to come into this place of integration.
And why do you think tapping is that? What is it about tapping that brings everything else together?
I guess it's working with the body-mind integration. We're able to work with Western psychology and the teachings of the Eastern traditions. We're able to work to activate energy centers within the body that go on to activate parts of the brain, to release energies that may be stagnant, that we don't even know are there. We even have ways of working with pre-memory. That's really exciting. It's really exciting. Most of us, well, all of us were influenced greatly by the first 7 years of our life. And a lot of those years, we don't have conscious memory from that time. But our brains were formulated according to our experiences. You know, I find that mind-boggling. And to work with tapping is a way to be able to free ourselves from the, it's like those early years provided limitations, like we were imprisoned in belief systems and we didn't even know how they got there. And tapping helps us to let go of belief systems that we don't even know exist, as well as the ones that we do know about.
Yeah. Yeah. I love what you're sharing. And I think that, you know, without necessarily going down that rabbit hole, the trauma-informed model of spiritual awakening is what had been missing for even the first sort of 20 years of my spiritual journey, and really even in the last 3, 4, 5 years, that understanding of how trauma shapes us, shapes the brain, you know, informs the nervous system, and ultimately, you know, determines whether or not any of the spiritual teachings stick, right? So I know, you know, without going into too much of your personal story, that that foundation of trauma from your childhood meant that a lot of what you learned and engaged with could be understood but couldn't stick because you were trying to stick it on to a trauma or a, you know, an unconscious trauma. And I love that tapping's brought that freedom for you to be able to see you inherit everything that you had wanted to inherit but not been able to because of that unconscious or subconscious programming.
Absolutely. And there were times when I knew bits of this story and bits of that, bits of this, but there was no way I could find the key, you know, to let me out of that. It was like a prison.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things that I'm aware of as well and is part of our teaching is that you don't need to know the cause. You don't need to know every detail of your suffering. You don't need to unpack every box. It's simply enough to acknowledge that there is going to be trauma. Being a human in this lifetime is traumatic. And then there are all sorts of ways that we can be further traumatized or dysregulated by the world. But if we make a commitment to come into regulation and to work with those subconscious programs, we don't have to trawl back over our history to understand every single detail, because that ultimately won't change anything.
Yes, absolutely. This is what one of my teachers, associate professor, Peter Stapleton at Bond University, she refers to this work in energy psychology, which is what tapping is a part of, as the fourth wave of psychology. Peter is a highly experienced psychologist and was, in fact, the Australian Psychologist of the Year in 2019. And her work has gone on to validate this energy psychology in ways that can't be doubted by scientists, in that she uses the fMRI machine to show what happens in the brain prior to working with tapping and then maybe 6 weeks after people have started working with tapping. And so she can demonstrate right in front of your eyes exactly what was happening for people as a result of the work that she was doing. That's irrefutable proof that this energy psychology is going to be one of the support systems available to all of these awakening souls on this planet, especially the younger generations that are coming toward us now with so much more ability and depth and awareness of their spiritual nature, of what is and what is not. The fact that this type of psychology exists to support is enormously important, in my opinion.
And energy psychology, as you know, you are a student of Dawson Church and of energy psychology. It's a qualification that isn't recognized in Australia yet, but I'm sensing from what Peter Stapleton's been sharing recently that that shift may happen in Australia. It is recognized in the US, and it does seem to me, as you say, the evidence base is so powerful now that to ignore this quantum or energetic level of who we are as human beings is only going to delay the healing process for so many, and particularly around things like PTSD. We know from the evidence, the very good evidence, that it works, and it works so efficiently. And for me, this is so important because where I work is not in that layer of the energy psychology itself, and I don't work in trauma or those places, even though I do touch on them. But if I can take someone who's been prepared by you or by someone who's in that space, we then are free to actually liberate our consciousness to go into those deep mystical experiences, which otherwise can be a reason or a way to bypass or deny our human experience. And instead of that, we want a fully embodied experience. And that's why I love the intersections of our work.
It is absolutely invaluable in that process. It wasn't available to us. It's only been in the last 30 years. The basic components of it were in working with Eastern philosophies of, they were there then, when they all started to be brought together and created into thought field therapy. It just started to flow in ways that made it doable for the average person, and therein lay the secret. Because when it was first started to be taught, it was designed to be taught to other scientists, to doctors and psychologists. But the work that is being taught can be learned by anyone, and that's the value of it.
I'm wondering then, what role does channeling play for you now? When do you use it? How do you use it? Where does it sit inside of or not your work with intuitive intelligence tapping?
It's in the name, intuitive intelligence. Intuitive intelligence is fed, it's nurtured, it's like a beautiful spring in there. This spring of information and guidance that my reasoning consciousness might go desperately looking for answers to a situation that's been created by a client, but it's not in my reasoning mind. So at that point, I can just breathe, let go, and allow the wisdom, my own great soul wisdom, connected to, the mighty I am presence of all that is. I no longer try to define who's talking to me, where this information is coming from. I am a part of this great wellspring of divine wisdom and knowledge. And if I get out of the road, if the little me gets out of the road, then I can be inspired. I can intuit what is in the highest good of the person I'm working with.
Yeah, beautiful. So, Angelique, I want to ask a few questions so we can all get to know you a little bit better. I would love to know, what do people misunderstand about you?
Well, I guess for me, the biggest thing is my family and some friends who've decided that I am religious and therefore either to be avoided, or if they have to be with me, if they must spend time with me, I'm allowed to talk about anything I like except who I am and what I do, and the rest is easy.
So best avoid those people, I'd say.
Oh, I was born into the family, so you're kind of stuck with them.
I don't know. I think, well, you made some great humans who love hearing all about that part of you. So that works very well. And,
yes, indeed.
Having watched your journey throughout your life, you are often misunderstood. And, we have talked about previously that your generation were like the ones that created, cut down the thick forest undergrowth so that a path could emerge for my generation and the next to inherit on this spiritual path, and not just at the human level but at the energetic level. And I think being misunderstood is probably part of the burden of having come in your time.
I agree. In the beginning, we referred to ourselves as like those ships, icebreakers.
Yeah.
Moving through a frozen belief system. And it was difficult. There were a lot of different belief systems under the spiritual belief system banner. And not all of those were compatible. And so there were often people who, didn't necessarily agree with the way you thought or what you taught. These days, there's such a great diversity. It's wonderful. And people can just go online and find what feels right for them. But But in the early days, no, there we didn't have that freedom. And yeah, I've been blessed to watch the energy open through the years and watch people like yourself being able to come through. But I also know it's going to be easier for your children and their children as yeah. time goes by. They're just going to take what we're learning now, they'll be born with. And yeah. you know, they will wonder why we had to struggle in order to get where we are.
Yeah. And I've seen that even in, you know, every iteration of the third level, when I think back to the students that we began with and how challenging it was for them to understand what the work was, to the students now who just get it like that, you know, that's even in a 5-year period. And it's because there is that energetic signature for them to walk into and inherit, and to be able to take up that mantle with so much more ease. And yes, the task is that we just keep evolving that path for those who come next. Yeah, I really honor you for your courage to stay true to who you are, even when those voices of dissent or just complete shutdown were there, because I think even in our own family, things that people won't talk to you about, they'll applaud me for. And, you know, I've seen that happen as yes. well, right? And that's really interesting.
Yes, exactly. And there were times through my life when I gave up, you know, in my spiritual journey. It was too hard. I didn't have the support I needed or wanted. But I never got away with that for very long. You know, I was always brought back into an awareness by meeting the right person or finding the right book, as we all do.
Yes, or giving birth to the right children.
Yes, my beautiful little spiritual babies. That was very valuable. Yeah.
So what are you reading right now?
Oh, I'm reading this amazing book by quite a talented author. I would recommend it. It's called Superconscious Intuition, and it's written by Dr. Ricky Jane Adams. Now, you must be aware that there's a lot of depth in this book. You know, as we're talking now, this information, this understanding of my own daughter bringing this information through isn't her just following my trail. This is her, you know, sort of blasting great openings into our conscious awareness. So I find this an intense read, but it opens the doorways to my mind and into my heart. So reading this material makes me think that, you know, I can do more. I can expand more. I can be better. And so I'm very grateful for that. But, you know, it takes a lot of reading. Well, for me.
Thank you for that review. I'm very grateful for that. And Angelique was one of the editors. And has written the foreword to the book. So yes, I'm very grateful for your words. And, you know, I think one of the great opportunities or challenges for me as your daughter was, you know, learning from you, but then having the courage to make different choices, which I have done at different points. And of course, we're well aware of those things. Ultimately, it all leads back to the same thing, but the language that we use and the path that we take to get to that oneness is often quite different. And I think that was one of the great challenges for me, that I sometimes felt like I was betraying you personally if I didn't do everything as you taught me to do it, even though you never asked me to do that. You were never trying to indoctrinate me or tell me that this was the only way. But I think I felt such a sense of loyalty to you, and also an awareness of how hard you'd worked to get to where you'd got, that if I rejected it or chose something different, that it was, yeah, it was a personal rejection. And I've often sat with the discomfort of making different choices, less so now, but certainly in my 20s, I felt a lot of conflict around that. And I think that was, you know, there were times where you and I had to sit with you know, in the fire of knowing that we were not meeting around some things and how to navigate that. I don't think we always got it right.
Yeah, but there's no right and wrong. That's the whole thing. And I was aware of your struggle. And so delighted when you just suddenly decided, well, I'm going to fly anyway, because I always knew that your potential was greater than mine. And as I say, your children's potential will be greater than yours, and so on and so forth. It's who and what we are. It's how we evolve as a race. We would have all been a lot poorer had you made the decision not to do that.
Well, thank you. I couldn't be where I am without you. But yes, I think when we are inheriting a lineage, and whether it is as direct as mother to daughter or you know, more indirectly, having the courage to say this works for me and this doesn't work for me is really the time that we're in now. We're in a time of spiritual innovation. We're beyond the end times, like literally we're beyond the end of days. So nothing's written, the prophecies ended and we kept going, right?
Yes.
And still, yes. I see a lot of people cling to the way it was because this is a term Matthew uses a lot, which I like, which is the call to antiquity. It's good because it's old and it's not true, right? We are evolving our consciousness so rapidly that it's okay for us to say that approach no longer is necessary or doesn't serve me, and for all of us to have the courage, even if it means turning away from tradition or from our own teaching lineage, to claim our own sovereignty and inner authority around our relationship with God.
That is so absolutely true. I remember as a younger woman sitting in a vast auditorium of 8,000 people waiting for the Dalai Lama to come on stage. And there was always someone up front on the stage warming you up for this experience. And the excitement was, you know, tangible. And then when he came out, he was accompanied by an entourage of his nuns and monks. And I remember looking and thinking, I so desperately wanted to belong to a family like that, where I was supported and nurtured. And then the tears just came, because even in that place, with all the energy of those people, I did not belong to that family. This was, I couldn't join something that told me how to think, what to believe, what to say, how to say it, that it was, patriarchal or anything else. Even if it hadn't been, I wouldn't have been able to join, because I needed to be beyond that and I didn't know what that meant. And that was very lonely.
Yeah. I love you for sharing that, because I think I was reading a book called The End of Your World by Ajahn Shanti, and he's an American teacher who was talking about what awakening means. And the journey to enlightenment is actually one of destruction of identity, not more labels of identity. And we often think that that is spiritual success, is that it's that community, it's that connection, there's others who agree with you, it's that, you know, you understand yourself more and more. But it's actually the opposite. It's the letting go of any sense of over identification or attachment to form in any way. And it's a grieving process.
It is a grieving process, but I think by nature we are designed to need the security of belonging and to be protected within. And, that's why the tall poppy syndrome exists, because if you raise your head out of that safe place, someone might chop it off. And so all of my spiritual life has been lived in that place, being the butt of jokes at dinner parties, et cetera, et cetera. And when you can laugh along, nobody means harm by it, but you don't belong. it's that simple. And now it's wonderful because I don't need to. I don't have a need to belong to anything. And I love to support other people in their journey to that freedom. It's very, very exciting for me.
Yeah, I agree. And it is freedom. And, it's... It's also very challenging. You know, I was just reflecting this week. I was sharing a little bit about my decision to give up alcohol, which was a problematic relationship from the first sip when I was 17, as you well know. And I was sharing a little bit on social media. And yesterday I got a very unsolicited message from someone I don't know at all, telling me that me declaring my sobriety explains why everything I've been sharing lately is so shitty, basically, and that I'm so, you know, all these terrible things said in a way that was, I think, meant to potentially be helpful. I'm not sure, but it was a moment of actual great comfort for me to realize that instead of falling into a hole, I could just let that person have their opinion of me. And you know that for a long time, other people's opinions have meant way more than they should for me. And I could really just let that person reflect whatever they needed to reflect off me. It wasn't about me. It wasn't personal. But it has taken a good 25 years to get to the point where I'm no longer seeking that external validation. And sometimes I am. Sometimes we all are. But it was a great litmus test, I guess, of, as you're saying, it's the key to freedom is that you don't need anyone else to understand your journey.
Yeah, you don't need to belong. Yeah. Because, you know, what you belong to, what you know you belong to now is all that is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The acceptance of the atonement, the holy instant. And, you know, the beautiful truth that person at the dinner party laughing at you is you. That person, you know, rejecting me because of what I shared is me, and that there is no way that I can be harmed by that unless I am harming myself. All right, if today was your last day on earth, what would you want us all to know?
Well, that was a nice segue into this, because for me, it's that you have choices. So that you do the best with what you've got, with what you've already created, where you are right now in your life. And you love the life you've created, but you know that you have such a lot of freedom to make new choices if you wish to. And so even if you're feeling restricted by finances or health or where you have to work, or it's wonderful to know that you have this profound ability to choose how you feel in this moment, right here and now, about anything, that we can change our fears and our self-doubts. You know, they regulate the health of our body, the health of our mind. And if they do, then why not hop into your superpower and make a new choice around that and bring in beauty and joy and unconditional love? That's just as freely available to you as the fears and self-doubts. So why do we hang on to them? So do it, you know. Freedom of choice is your superpower. So just remember, I am soul. I am peaceful. I am beautiful. I am joyous. I am soul. You have access to everything that you want by choice.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mama Angelique. Thank you for sharing with me. And I feel like I've got to know you a little better as well. And I'm really grateful for that. And really, you know, there's a lot in your story that we haven't even begun to touch on. But as we're talking, I'm really going to make that offer to you now, that if you write your story, the Institute will publish it. And I would love for you to commit to putting that down in writing, because you do have such a compelling story to share. And there's so much for you to offer the world through your own process of awakening, and perhaps just reflecting on what Out on a Limb did for you, those words that reached you from Shirley MacLaine, what your words might do for someone else. So there's a little provocation.
Thank you. It's an exciting opportunity.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. I'm sure it's going to be a highlight of season two, undoubtedly. Everybody loves hearing from Mama Angelique, and getting to know her better is a lovely blessing. So much love to you all. In 2022, the Institute for Intuitive Intelligence is bringing you a whole new way to get qualified as a professional intuitive.
The Intuitive Intelligence Method Accreditation is a 100-hour training program, including personal development, professional development, and spiritual development, that will take your skills as an intuitive to the level of superconscious. This program is available online and in person across a range of different dates and deliveries in 2022 and 2023. We'd love for you to head to the instituteforintuitiveintelligence.com to find out more about how you can get qualified faster and more efficiently to increase your power to serve.